Okay, so welcome to my first talk of this meditation retreat. I did hear that there's some people haven't meditated before, so this is your lucky day, so that you can learn how to meditate in such a way that you get very peaceful, very happy, and very still. And again, it's great that, you know, even when I went to Korea, teaching other people, even monks, who should know better how to meditate and get these incredibly powerful results from people. So this is a very, very powerful method of meditation, which is even spreading to traditional Buddhist countries who have lost the plot over many years. But I'm being honest. So this type of meditation is learning how to relax. Relax the mind. And to understand exactly how it works, to understand that meditation is all about keeping the mind still. So if you start by even imagining the word stillness and getting your head inside the word stillness, the whole purpose of meditation, on the path of meditation, becomes very clear. If you are going to incline your mind towards stillness, all activity, all control, all choosing creates agitation in the mind. And when the mind becomes agitated, you move away from stillness. But the less one actually does, the closer one comes towards stillness. Ajahn Chah, my teacher, would always use a simile. He would wave his hand up and down, and he said, "This is a leaf on a tree when the wind is blowing." And this is not the natural state of a leaf to move up and down. It's only caused by the wind. And when the wind stops, yes, the leaf keeps going up and down, but less and less and less, until eventually the leaf becomes perfectly still, which is its natural state. He said it's the same with the human mind. The natural state of the human mind is to be still. It only moves because of some things outside of itself creates that movement and agitation. And those things are called wanting. And the activity which comes from trying to achieve what you want. So, in brief, the whole path of meditation is letting go of all wanting. Being content, just being here, so you can experience deeper and deeper states of stillness. And eventually, you'll find the mind does become incredibly still. And a mind which is still is, number one, very profound. It feels like this is the sort of thing which meditation should produce. It has that feeling of holiness or spiritual depth, of profundity. It smells of that. And number two, it is so pleasant. It's a very, very happy state. The more still you are, the happier you feel, which is almost like a side benefit. But it also means that you start to enjoy meditation. It becomes one of the greatest things you could ever do. Even last night, I just came in from Korea yesterday afternoon and gave a talk at Nolomara Center. And I did have a bit of a cough because of the pollution in Korea coming over from China. It was also very cold. You know, coughing and spluttering, and then learning how just to get into your meditation before the talk. And you know, really sort of touching the sweet spot of meditation. And it's just so blissful, you know, to come back from a long trip, tired and a bit sickly, and still be able to shut your eyes and just go into this really sweet spot of meditation. And afterwards I came out, I had to suppress, oh wow, this is brilliant. So it's one of the best things which I've ever done is learn how to meditate properly and to experience and appreciate the joy of stillness. So that's number two. This is going to give you a lot of happiness when you get into it. And lastly, it gives you the insight. You can actually understand the truth of things. And one of the most important things to understand is just what stillness truly is. When you understand what peace is, it makes the way we run around in this world, you know, we realize how crazy we are. It's a strange thing, but you'll be here for 9 days, and day after day after day, everybody else will be roughly slowing down at the same rate. And after 9 days, when you get back, when you go home, when you get in your car and start driving down those highways, you'll think, my God, people are crazy. They're mad. The way they run around and drive so fast and have all this loud music in their cars and other stuff. Crikey. I used to be like that 10 days ago. And you were, or rather you are right now. You're crazy, guys. But little by little, you'll slow down. And then when you leave, you realize just how foolishly you rushed around when you realize what peace really is. Things like that start changing your life. You realize, what am I living like this for? Rushing around, trying to get this, when I can get everything I ever wanted just by being still. Peace, happiness, contentment, fulfillment, it's all here for me when I stop. So you get amazing insights. And these are not insights which you write a book about. These are insights which change your life. They're the real insights. I know some people think insights are what you can argue with somebody at the coffee shop about, you know, what the meaning of life is, all theory and no real essence to it. But the real insights are what changes you, which removes the suffering of life and the stupidity of life and makes you a more peaceful, happy, joyful human being. So this is what happens when you're still. You experience incredible amounts of insights. And they just come quite naturally. Classic simile, because I was just having a walk around beforehand, get some exercise, blow the cobwebs of travel off me, and just seeing the lakes. Now, we're fortunate here. We've got a couple of little ponds and one nice lake, and a few ducks swimming on that lake. It's very, very cute. But I always remember that lake. If the ducks aren't swimming on it, and if it's a quiet day, you get a very good reflection in that lake of the hillside and maybe the stars at night time. And I came in last night, it's a beautiful clear night, very different than the pollution you see in sort of big countries like Korea, which is very heavily industrialized, to enjoy the beautiful half moon and also the stars at night. It's a beautiful place to be here in Australia, and to see the reflection of that in the lake. You can only see the reflection if there are no waves on the surface of the lake. If there are any waves at all, it distorts the image. So the cause of seeing a true reflection of nature is having a mind which is as still as a calm mountain lake. A mountain lake so still that nothing moves across its surface. So it's like a mirror, a beautiful polished sheet of glass which perfectly reflects the truth all around it. That's what happens when you become still. So stillness is the whole point of meditation. From it we get peace, happiness, and insights. So when we understand that it is stillness is the goal of our meditation, it makes everything else which I'm going to say in this retreat, it makes sense. In order to be still, I've got to somehow or other trick you into stop messing around with your meditation. To leave it alone. To let it be. Just to whatever the mind wants to do, off you go. It's your thing. I'm just going to sit here, be still, and just watch. Now, it's very easy for me to say, oh, just let go. Don't do anything. Be still. But that really goes against the grain of everything you've ever done in your life. Ever since you were small, you were encouraged to put forth effort, to strive. If you want to achieve, you got to work hard for it. And now someone comes along and tells you to go in totally the opposite direction. Stop all this striving. Stop and be still. I know sometimes people always ask me, what about right effort? Right effort, Ajahn Brahm. That's an important factor of the Buddha's teachings of the Eightfold Path. It is. It's the effort to renounce, to let go, to be kind, to be gentle. It's the effort to do something you're not used to. It's the effort to stop, to restrain. That is the effort. Really, it should be no effort at all. It's just stopping old bad habits of always getting involved. You are, except for Dania, you are visitors to this retreat center. You don't live here. You're just only here for a few days. So it's very easy not to worry too much about, you know, your room, about the buildings, because you're only going to be here a few days and then you're out of here. You're a visitor. And you know, a visitor has a very, very different mindset to an owner. If it's me, I mean, I've only just arrived here late last night, and you know, went around checking, making sure everything is okay. You don't do that. I do that because, you know, I'm responsible for this place. If you're a visitor, it's much easier to let things go and let things be. For example, if you visit somebody else's house, you know, you go there just to have a cup of coffee. How many of you, when you visit your friend's house, do the washing up for them, and vacuum the carpet for them, and mow the lawn for them? You never do that to somebody else's house. You're just a visitor. A visitor doesn't have responsibility, which means they can just let things be, and they can appreciate the place for what it is, rather than thinking of all the things which need to be fixed up. That was one of the insights I had years ago, when I realized I was working so hard, you know, in our city center, going overseas, this place, Bodhinyana Monastery, just more places where I'd had to work. And people would come and they'd say, what a beautiful retreat center you've got. Are you kidding? Haven't you seen that building which needs to be finished over there for the caretakers? Haven't you seen all the stuff which needs to be fixed up? The gardens which aren't finished yet? You can't see that because you're visitors. At Bodhinyana Monastery over the road, every time I used to walk over there, I see all the things which need to be developed, to be fixed, to be cleaned. Visitors would come and say, oh, that's a beautiful monastery you have there. I think, are you joking? A beautiful monastery? Can't you see all the work which needs to be done? They said, no, because I'm a visitor, not an owner. So I decided one morning every week I would pretend I was a visitor to the monastery in which I lived, not an owner. Same with Dania. On this retreat, Dania, you are not the caretaker, you're a visitor to this retreat. And if you're a visitor, you've got no responsibility. And as soon as I changed my mind from being an owner to a visitor, the monastery in which I lived looked so beautiful, so perfect, because I just could not see the things which were wrong. I was a visitor, not an owner. And that was the way I could relax in the monastery in which I lived. If ever you want to try that when you go home, spend a couple of hours every week, longer if you can, imagining you are a visitor to the house in which you live, which means you do not have to tidy up or wash the dishes. You can just enjoy the place, like any other visitor would do. And I use the same for meditation. I'm a visitor to my mind, not an owner. Which means I can let it be. I don't have to fix it up. I don't have to see all the faults and mend them all. I'm a visitor to my body and mind. And with the idea that you're a visitor, not an owner, it makes it again much easier to let things go, to leave them alone, and just to enjoy the moment. You've been fixing up your body and mind ever since you were born. Give it a break. Let it go. Your body and mind are good enough, for goodness sake. Otherwise, you'll never find stillness. Some people think, oh, I'll fix it up first and then I'll be still. I'll wash the dishes, write the letters, finish the emails, but when that's all done, then I can take a rest. No matter how many people I keep asking, when are you retiring? When are you retiring? Oh, next year. That was about 10 years ago. Oh, yeah, I'll retire. Yeah, I'm gonna do it, yeah. But they never do. So, any of you thinking of retiring, you have retired now. For 9 days you've retired. You've got no work to do. You've got no business. Those of you thinking of separating from your partner, you've separated now. You can be back with them again in 9 days, but now you are divorced. You're single again. No responsibilities, no worries, no business. Just be free for 9 days. Just to let things go. You're a visitor, not an owner. And don't try and own your own body and mind either. Be a visitor to your body. A visitor to your mind. Which means you don't own anything. And stop being so damn critical. My mind is tired. My mind is restless. My mind is all over the place. It's not your mind. Leave it alone. You're just a visitor. Then you can appreciate its beauty. And you can also find some peace. It's a trick. So you can let things go. And don't always be this control freak. The control freaks, there's so much different levels of control freakness. The big control freaks want to control the whole world. You know, the Obamas, Julia Gillard, you know, Rupert Murdochs. They want to control everything. And then you've got the control freak, your boss, who wants to control the office and all the people who work in it. And then there's the control freak, you know, and the person who, they used to say, wears the trousers in the family. Whether it's the husband or the wife, or sometimes the kids control all of you. Whoever it is, you know, some people like to control others. And the very, very, very least, you're the control freak of your own life. Now, everybody seems to do that, except wise meditators. What's it like to be with a boss from hell? Have you ever worked for a boss from hell? If you have, or well, I'm sure that you have, those people who think you have not, you have got a boss from hell. And that boss from hell always ordering you around, never allowing you to rest, never appreciating all your hard work, always giving you a hard time. That boss from hell is you. You are your own boss from hell. I'm doing a 9-day retreat. I'm no messing around this time. You were here last time, but this time you are going to get jhanas. Okay, none of this sleeping in. You're going to be here 4:30 every morning without fail. If you don't get here 4:30 or if you get here and you fall asleep, no breakfast, okay? I'm going to be strict with you. And that boss from hell, please, that's not allowed in this retreat. Don't be your own boss from hell. Because the way to let go, what right effort is the effort to renounce, to let go, the effort to be kind. No kindness, compassion, gentleness, that takes effort. It goes against the grain to forgive, to let yourself be, just to be generous to yourself. That's so hard for people to do. It takes effort. So on this retreat, if you haven't been told already, this is a compassion, stillness, gentleness retreat. So you do not have to be here at 4 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock, or whatever time. If you feel like coming here in the early morning, you're welcome to come. If you feel like meditating flat out in your comfortable beds, you're welcome to catch up on your sleep. If you want to do the morning chanting here at 6 o'clock, you're welcome. If you want to do your own chanting in your bedroom, you're also welcome to do snoring meditation at 6 o'clock in the morning. In other words, please don't let the schedule be your boss from hell. Always having to get here on time and always being afraid, oh, I'm late. I don't give a damn if you come here in the middle of my talk or if you want to leave in the middle. I don't care. I just want you to be kind and happy and just gentle and peaceful. You can do whatever you like. If you want to sort of lay down and have a snooze in the middle of my exciting, inspirational talk, go for it. In other words, stop putting all of these controls and constraints on yourself. Don't be a control freak. Be kind instead. So, for the first few days, you're allowed to sleep as much as you like. Any time of the day or night you feel tired, catch up. I say that because I know from friends who are doctors, psychologists, that people are tired. Probably the biggest disease of our modern world is tiredness. Even in places you may not expect. It was last April in Malaysia. I travel many, many countries. They wanted me to take a youth seminar for the afternoon. There's about 200, 300, 15 to 25 year olds. And you know, we had many discussions. And one discussion was, what's your biggest emotional problem? And I thought it was going to be like depression or sort of, you know, lack of self-esteem, you know, for people because the peer pressure in adolescence is so strong. But what they came up with, the clear winning, they wrote these on pieces of paper and we sort of collected everything and collated. The biggest problem with 15 to 25 year olds in Malaysia, and this is probably the same in most countries of our modern world, was tiredness. Our kids are exhausted. And you know, you get that put on 15 or 25. Imagine what it's like in your 30s, 40s, 50s. We are an exhausted race, human beings. We work and struggle so hard, we don't have enough time. Which is why when you come on a retreat like this, I really encourage every one of you to catch up on sleep. Rest. You deserve it. Because otherwise, if you don't catch up on that sleep and relax and rest, you will find that physically you're so tense you can never experience the stillness of the mind. That also means you're failing to be kind to yourself. For those who haven't heard this was a classic story. I've been teaching like this for a long time, and it works. That's why it's very hard to come into a retreat by Ajahn Brahm. That's why I do go to all countries, and the senior monks come on the retreat to find out what's going on, to learn their meditation. So, you know, you're getting one of the top teachers here today. And this actually works. The classic story, many, many years ago, teaching a retreat in Sydney, and an executive, you know, from some big company in Sydney, she arrived really late, about 11:30 at night, because she had to try and tie up all the loose ends before she could arrive at the retreat. So she arrived in the middle of the night. So she missed the evening talk, and when I she asked for a quick interview in the morning. When I told her this, that most people are tired, so to practice your kindness, and take as much sleep as you want, she really took that advice on board. She went straight back to bed, got up for lunch, after lunch, went to sleep again. She got up in the morning, just before breakfast, after breakfast, went to bed, got up for lunch, went to bed again afterwards. She said for the first 2 or 3 days she slept and slept and slept. She was just catching up. After 3 days she had hardly done any meditation at all. But she felt so good. As you do when you really caught up in your sleep. Oh, I really feel got energy now. I feel healthy. And then the next 3 days, you know, she started to get into her meditation. And she caught up with everybody else. So by the 6th day, she was on a par with all the other people. And of course, the last 3 days, she just took off. She was one of the star meditators. Really got some really deep meditation. And I used her courage and wisdom as an example for all others. If you try and meditate with a tired body, it doesn't work. You can't get deep. It hasn't got the energy, hasn't got the joy, hasn't got the comfort. Which is why even the Buddha, before he sat under the Bodhi tree, he had good rest, bathed, he had actually a meal fit for a heavenly being before he became enlightened, to get his body really comfortable. And then when he meditated, it's so easy to get the deep meditations. So that's advice number one for you. If you feel tired, rest. As you rest, you go to bed. When you don't set alarm clocks. When you feel you want to get up, have a shower, cup of tea, and then meditate. And you feel really good. The body is ready to meditate. So that's number one. Please be kind to your body for the next few days. Don't keep pushing it and making it tense. And if you can do that, if you can do that with your body, it's pretty easy to do the same with your mind. To be kind to your mind in order to bring it to a state of peacefulness, of stillness. Those of you who have known my method of meditation, it's just making peace, being kind, being gentle. That's all you ever do. Making peace, being kind, being gentle with every moment. That is the essence of meditation. It's nothing really to do with what you are watching. Observing the breath, observing your body, observing loving kindness, blah, 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 blah. All of those are just skillful means. It's what you're actually doing, not what you are watching, is the essence of meditation. So it's making peace with your dullness, being kind to your restlessness, being gentle with your body. That is the essence of meditation. As far as what you're experiencing with present moment or with the breathing or with beautiful nimittas, these lights which come up in the mind, that's just what happens when you make peace and are kind and gentle. That's just par for the course. This is what happens. These are just stages of letting go, that's all. But unfortunately, that many people, they want more than just saying, oh, just make peace, be kind, be gentle. So that's why that sometimes, again, we have these little tricks. So you can learn how to make peace with things. So you can be more encouraged to be kind and gentle. And just even taking rests is one of my tricks to teach you how to be kind. to be kind to yourself and to your body, for goodness sake. If you want to try and control your body, say, I've slept enough, I'm going to meditate now. That attitude never works. If you have that attitude to try and control your body, the next thing you'll do is controlling your mind. And you'll never find any peace that way. The old simile, I'll say it once, I probably won't say it again, because I say it too many times. How do you keep the water in the cup perfectly still? I have a cup half full of water, I hold it up, and it is moving. I try really hard to keep the water still, and it's still moving. I focus, I concentrate, I put forth all my effort. The water always moves. This is the way that many people meditate, trying to hold their mind still. If it doesn't become still, they just try harder. And they really put force and focus and time, just like the monks in Korea were doing. Holding their mind hour after hour for 3 months trying to find some stillness. And they just couldn't do it. And then a smart aleck monk from the West comes along and says, hey guys, that's not how you can keep your mind still. Put it down! Let it go, for goodness sake. I said, but as soon as you put it down, it moves more. Yes, it does move more when you let go. Only for a minute or two. When you let go, your mind becomes more sleepy, more restless. You get more thoughts coming in your mind, not less, when you first let go. But keep on letting go. And after... Okay, it's already still. Now that water in my cup is perfectly still. And it's so easy to do when you know how. No effort, except the effort to stop myself picking it up again. That's my effort. Stupid. Don't do that. The effort is to restrain the urge to pick things up and control them. The effort to be kind, just to let it be, to be gentle. That is how we meditate. So, we let our body down, let it be peaceful. We let our mind be still. We let it be still. We don't try to be still. And you'll find that meditation becomes the easiest thing in the world. And states of meditation you thought were totally beyond you become accessible. You too become peaceful. You too experience this incredible stillness of the mind, its power and its beauty and its profundity. It just happens to you when you learn how to stop. So, first of all, stillness is what we're trying to cultivate here. We're not having lots of stress by keeping to the schedule. Everything on this retreat is optional. So you don't have to get up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock. I haven't even seen the schedule. Breakfast at 6:45 is optional. You don't have to have breakfast. I said that this morning. You'll always, don't worry about alarm clocks. You will always wake up at 6:45 and you always know when it's lunchtime. So afternoon meditations. If you feel like meditating, come in here, meditate. If you feel like doing walking meditation, walk meditation. Keep it nice and soft and easy. Be gentle to yourself. Don't set hard and fast schedules. One of Ajahn Chah's other teachings, which I have to emphasize at the beginning of every retreat, he always told his disciples, you meditate not to attain things. You meditate to let go of things. Change the attitude. Don't come here trying to attain jhana, sowan, psychic powers, or whatever else you want to attain while you're on this retreat. You haven't come here to get something. You've already got too much. You come here to let go of things, to empty out, to be less burdened, to be more free. You come here to let go, not to attain. If you keep that in mind as well, meditation is so easy. How can you fail on this retreat? You've got nothing to attain. You just want to let go of more and more things. Be more empty, more free, not have more attainments. So in order to do that, we learn how to sit down and just be. Don't try and get somewhere. To be more fully where you already are. For example, the walking meditation. This place has been designed by the top meditation retreat designers in the world, which is Ajahn Bamali and me and a few others. Well, I mean, so I always say that if you're humble, flaunt it. So we've got these beautiful meditation, walking meditation halls. And if you look in those halls, there's red carpets. This is how we really appreciate walking meditation. It's red carpet treatment for the walking meditation. So you walk, you start from one end, you walk to the other end, you come back again. That's called walking meditation. But people say, well, what do I do? You start at one end, walk to the other end, and come back again. But yeah, what do I do? Shut up, nothing. Just start at the beginning, walk one end, and walk back again, and keep on doing that. But what's the point? Exactly, it's got no point. You end up where you started, which is beautiful. Why is it in your life you always have to do something for a purpose? This is... That's why I like the walking meditation. You don't get anywhere. But you can be where you are. So you're not trying to get somewhere. So if you do the walking meditation, start wearing it, go back and forth, however long you like, not getting anywhere. Your whole purpose is just to be here. And don't make being here a goal. Okay? Being here is what happens when you stop having goals. So you're just here, you're with your body when you're walking, you're with this moment, you're just being here, instead of always having to go somewhere else. And try and be a bit still and quiet, because a lot of time when you think there's nothing to do, you go off fantasizing, planning, writing your memoirs, or whatever else goes on in your head. And don't think that no one can know what's going on in your head. Remember, monks who've got deep meditation can read people's minds, so be careful. Otherwise, I might tell everybody else, especially your wife, what you're thinking. No, I won't do that. But no, just, you know what you're thinking. So don't sort of waste your time just in fantasy world or planning a future which will never exist. Or remembering a past which has been totally distorted. It's not really what really happened. So just please let go of the past and the future when you're walking meditation. No past, no future. Just with this one step you're walking now. And just being more fully where you already are. Just learning how to be here. It's the same when you're doing sitting meditation. What's it like to be here? What's it like to be you with your eyes closed, with nothing to do, nowhere to go, nothing to achieve, just being you, whoever that is. Being in the moment. For those people who want to have something to hang their dua onto, just do the present moment. No past, no future. You know, it's so lovely not to have to worry about the future. I've got so many things I should be doing. Same with you. All the stuff which you're supposed to be doing, people you're supposed to be calling, articles you're supposed to be writing, things you're supposed to be fixing. Oh, what the hell? I'm going to just let it all go wrong. I've got this saying. that when I become irresponsible and I stop planning the future, there are lots of problems for the future when I don't plan in advance. Things go wrong. Yeah, that happens. It happens to all of us. If you don't plan, it's going to be things go wrong. But when I do plan, things go wrong anyway. Either way, they go wrong. So I decide if they're going to go wrong anyway, whether I plan or don't plan, it's much better not to plan. Then I can enjoy things before they go wrong. I expect everything to go wrong. It always does. Even if you ever notice when you really plan everything, when you micromanage and you get plan A, plan B, plan C, what happens? D always happens. Doesn't matter how many letters there are in the alphabet, what actually happens is something different than you plan. If you want to have a definition of life, that's what it is. Life is what you never plan. At least that's my life. I never planned to do this. The last thing I expected when I was young was to be mooning around Korea teaching Zen monks how to meditate. That's the weirdest thing. So all this stuff which, life is just totally unexpected. And understanding that, what's the point of planning things? It's absolutely craziness. Just let it happen. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 9 days? Stop planning anything. Don't even plan lunchtime. It just happens. It arises. So you don't have to think about it. So because of that, you can be totally free of the future. Absolutely free. Isn't that blissful? I've got nothing to worry about in the whole world. No financial worries. Who cares, just what's going to happen next? No husband worries. Who cares what he's doing when you're away? No wife worries, no kid worries. Just let everything disappear. Be totally free. This is your retreat. It's a retreat from the future. So no plans, no worries, no anxieties. All you have to do is just to be here. And all your past, I don't know what your history is. Some people have been through hell, double hell, treble hell. They've had such difficult lives. We've all got our wounds and our traumas. But please, they're not allowed in Jhana Grove. The whole past is left outside the gate. So you have no past. You untie that heavy burden from you, as if you've been dragging this heavy sled with all your past memories, dragging it up a muddy hill. It's just so tough, dragging the past, dragging it, dragging it, dragging it. And now you untie it so you can be free, not carrying anything behind you. All it really needs is just that confidence to do that. So is it all right that I don't need to weigh myself down with the burden of my past? Of course it is. So what the Buddha kept encouraging people to do, to let it go, be free. So whatever has happened in the past, just let it go. Say, no, I'm not going to be concerned with this. I'm free of this. And those of you who have difficulty letting go of the past because really bad things happen to you, please use this little psychology technique, which those of you who've been here before have heard many times. Write it down on a piece of paper, all the bad things which happen to you. It's called acknowledging. But here in Jhana Grove, you must choose the correct piece of paper to write down all the terrible things which happened to you of the past. And that piece of paper is called toilet paper. And we've got lots of it in this place. So write down all the bad things which happened to you on a roll of toilet paper. And if you can write it down in brown ink, dark brown ink, that is the best colour. Because as you're writing it down in dark brown ink, psychologically you're making the association with the other brown stuff which usually goes on toilet paper. Okay, this stuff which happened to you in the past is shit. And this is where it belongs, on toilet paper. And once you've made that association of the terrible things which has happened to you in your past, you also know that once you've used a piece of toilet paper, even if there's still many unsoiled parts on that toilet paper, even though you may be the most environmentally sensitive person on the planet, you still do not put used toilet paper in your pocket to be used the next time to save on paper. I see like how people use toilet paper. It's only a tiny bit is soiled. There's lots of other parts you haven't used yet. So why waste it? I mean, keep it for another time. You can actually leave it in the toilet paper for the next person. So there's a few other places you can use here. Because it's wasting paper. That's trees. That's forest being destroyed. Come on. I think if you go to the, Greenpeace or go to the Green Party headquarters, and I'm sure that you know, they actually probably do have a sign saying, please use both sides of the toilet paper. This is the Green Party, if you've got to say it. But you don't do that, do you? But what do you do with toilet paper when it's got some brown stuff on it? You take it to the toilet. So you write it down, brown ink on white toilet paper, read it, take it to the toilet, and you do the letting go ceremony. You know, you put it in the toilet bowl, and you press the button. Whoosh, 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 and it disappears, it's gone. Now, you may think that's funny, but you know, that works. I've been teaching that for a couple of years now, and people do it. It's a way of letting go of your past. It fulfills like the associations, which is important in psychology. The past is not something you should keep. It's something which does need to be disposed of because it's dirty, it's filthy, it's causing you too much pain and suffering in life. So take it to the toilet bowl. And when you press that button and you see it go away, that helps you let go of the real pain of the past. Doing some sort of ceremony, something physical, helps the emotional letting go. And that way, you can be free. Free of the pain of the past. So you can enjoy the present moment. It's the first stage of letting go. Being in the present moment. Now, there's only got 3 minutes to go till I finish this talk. There's some people who never meditated before, and they think, but I still don't know what to do. Yeah, there's nothing to do, just be here, okay? But, it doesn't work with people. So, stages of meditation. Present moment awareness, first of all. Sit down, no past, no future, present moment. Get into the present moment, for goodness sake. Number two, shut up. Be silent. Stop talking to yourself so much. And if you want to know how to do that, there's a little technique which you can do. I always like to try and find a little mantra. A mantra is like a group of words. And sort of the best one is one of the ones used in Indonesia for Indonesian Buddhists. Whenever they meet each other, they always tell each other, Namo Buddhaya, which means homage to the Buddha. It's very short, but very beautiful. It's just a greeting between Buddhists in that country. So you can use that, Namo Buddhaya, 5 syllables, chant it to yourself. Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya, again and again and again. That blocks out all your thinking. So you can't be thinking about the cricket or thinking about the stock market or thinking about that really hot girl who's in the cottage next to you or whatever else you're thinking. Instead of doing things like that, you have Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya. and then put spaces between the syllables. Na, mo, bud, da, ya, na. And listen to the space. That's silence. That's peace. There's a great deal of stillness in the spaces between the syllables. If your mind is very restless, you'll find thoughts will come up in those spaces. If that happens, close the spaces down. Na, mo, but, da, yeah. Only have tiny spaces. As the mind settles down and not so many thoughts come up, lengthen the spaces. Na, mo, but, da. The more calm you become, the longer the spaces between the syllables, and the more silence you have. So you can adjust this little mantra to suit your state of mind. If you're restless, there's hardly any spaces at all. As you become more still, lengthen the spaces, until you can make those spaces so long you don't need the mantra anymore. You have silence. You're aware. But not a thought going on in your head. Just like that. Aware. But no conversation going on. That is beautiful meditation. So, that is the basic instructions so far. The understanding that what we're supposed to be doing here is stillness. Understanding the only way to achieve that is through kindness, through letting go, through putting down the cup. Being kind to your body by resting enough on the first few days. Being gentle with your body and mind. Walking meditation, just backwards and forwards, just being here, not trying to get somewhere. We're not trying to attain things, we're just trying to let things go. Present moment awareness, no past, no future, just be here. And if you're still thinking, try simple Na Mo Buddha Ya. For those of you sitting on the floor, you can see all the empty chairs. You know what we put the chairs in this room for? For sitting on. So if your legs and bottom are sore, sit on a chair. If you prefer sitting on the ground, sit on the ground. But be kind to your body. There is no magic posture. Don't ever think that you have to sit in full lotus with a perfectly straight back in order to become enlightened. And all those people sitting in their chairs, you're just namby-pamby, cream-puffed, you don't know about right effort, you're never ever going to attain enlightenment. Real meditators, we sit on the ground, not like you lazy bums on the chairs. Don't think like that. Usually the people on the chairs get enlightenment much quicker. You know why? Simply because they're kind to their body. If you're okay sitting on the floor, fine. But if you've got sore backs or butts or knees, please sit on a chair. And you don't always have to meditate here in this room. There's many other beautiful places on this retreat center. You can meditate in your rooms. They're beautiful in there. You've got your own rooms and en suites. You get cushions. You can just the right temperature. You like meditate in there if you like. So you have lots and lots of places here. The facilities are made for you. So enjoy them. If you need a cup of tea, have a cup of tea. Shower, have a shower. Sleep, have a sleep. So you can be kind and gentle and peaceful to your body and mind. In the evening, we have a Q&A session between, 8 till 9, 9:30. So those of you who do have questions about your meditation, please write them on a piece of paper or in the basket and I'll answer them this evening. Tomorrow we will start interviews. So those people who want personal questions about their meditation, we put a sheet up in the reception area, and then you can just write your name down if you want an interview, starting tomorrow morning and tomorrow afternoon. And there'll be many, many more talks every morning from 8 till 9, where I'll tell you more details about meditation and how to avoid the pitfalls of meditation, have lots of peace and happiness and insights coming up from a mind which is trained not through effort, but through wisdom. Wisdom power, not willpower. And I'll give many more instructions. For those of you who may still feel a bit lost, don't worry. By the end of this retreat, you'll know everything about meditation. In the meantime, rest. If you feel like meditating, meditate. If you want to go for a walk, walk. If you want to have a cup of tea, have a cup of tea. So be kind to yourself in the first few days. And have a very peaceful, happy time. Any questions about... Danny, did I miss out anything? Is that okay for the time being? Okay, have a good morning. What time is lunch? 11 o'clock. We'll soon go. So enjoy the time if you want to have a rest. Don't worry about, oh, if I go to sleep, I won't wake up for lunch. That has never, ever happened. Never. Okay, so happy meditating.